And our guest, William Henry, we're going to take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, William, before we go to the vast calls, let's get your take on the Gospel of Judas. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm ecstatic. I mean, traditional Christianity says it's not truly good news. Well, I think it's truly phenomenal news, because what we're beginning to see is this steady stream of new knowledge. I mean, this manuscript claims that Jesus revealed secret knowledge to Judas.
Or Jedi, you never know.
Same name. Gnostic beliefs hold that secret and personal insights are the key to redemption, and this is a Gnostic text, and this is why traditional Christianity is opposed to it, because it says that this secret knowledge or personal insight, rather than faith in Jesus' resurrection, is the key to our ultimate salvation. And this is why they're saying it's not theologically true. Well, that's a person's opinion. This is the key to this whole argument, that there was this secret esoteric Christian tradition that has been wiped out through mass murder and through control and manipulation. An example that I often cite, which is really kind of the keystone image or keystone quote that I operate from, comes from another book that has been discredited, another Gnostic text called the Pistis Sophia. In this text, in response to a question posed by Mary Magdalene, Jesus says, "Cease not to seek day and night, and remit not yourselves until you find the purifying mysteries which will purify you and make you into a refined light, so that you will go on height and inherit the light of my kingdom." This is the exact knowledge the archons and controllers do not want us to possess, because once we have this knowledge, we are capable of enormous spiritual feats and capable, in fact, of leaving this realm permanently.
To the phones we go, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, thanks. First I'd like to say that I pretty much agree with William's thoughts on the book of Judas, but I disagree with him thinking that by everyone finding out the truth of where, you know, extraterrestrial intelligence, that it calls everyone to, you know, forget about their own religions and unite together. And I was wondering if he thinks that the only reason that government and world leaders haven't revealed the truth of extraterrestrial intelligence is to essentially protect religions.
That's a very good question, and I completely understand that viewpoint, and at times go along with it. I do believe that there is a beneficent purpose behind this from time to time, that there are those that think they're our father, and they want to protect us lowly children. But that only goes so far. When you resort then to protecting this knowledge by mass murder and genocide, you've stepped over onto the side I call evil. And unfortunately, that's what religious organizations have been doing for centuries upon centuries. Millions upon millions of people have been literally exterminated by organized religion to prevent these ultimate secrets from being revealed. And if that's a method of protection, so be it. I don't think so, though, but I can understand your argument.
Okay, thanks for calling. Let's move next to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with William Henry. Hi there.
Hi, this is Dalton. I'm a truck driver in Oklahoma.
Sure, Dalton.
And I was just wondering if he had kind of a quick synopsis, you know, in light of everything that's going on in the world in reference to the Bible and even the gospel according to Judas there, and the, you know, the last few guests that you've had on, if he had like a synopsis of, you know, to kind of tell us what his beliefs are, you know, along those kind of lines.
All right. Well, do you want to share that with us, William?
Be happy to. I believe that that Jesus and the other apostles were hardcore esoteric researchers. They scoured Iran, Iraq, Egypt, India, Mongolia, seeking knowledge from the ancient world, even pre-flood knowledge, that concerned the methods by which the latent knowledge within human DNA can be accessed, knowledge that ultimately affects the transformation of an ordinary human into an immortal being. The image that the Egyptians provide, they portray Osiris, the god of resurrection, who compares very favorably to Jesus. They portray Osiris in a pupil form, a very nice pun, because pupil, when spelled P-U-P-I-L, means student. When spelled P-U-P-A-L, means cocoon. So they portray him as a student cocoon who is looking for the secrets that will enable his transformation, his metamorphosis, if you will, from a cocoon into a butterfly, so that then he can become a Stargate walker and travel the paradise field of the stars.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with William Henry. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
My question for William is if he's familiar with the Rosicrucian Order headquartered in San Jose, and what he thinks is, like, their views are and what they're all about.
Yeah, I am familiar with it. My primary window on that, again, is Stephen Mailer, who's been intimately involved with that organization for a number of years. I think that they have done a tremendous job in attempting to, once again, assimilate this data from the ancient world. I'm very excited about this Quest for Immortality exhibit that's coming to Nashville this summer. And the reason why is because what they're going to do is recreate the tomb, the burial tomb of Thutmose III, an Egyptian pharaoh and initiate who is credited with the Rosicrucians as being the founder of the Rosicrucians and the founder of the Illuminati. So his treasure, his tomb, his stuff is coming to Nashville this summer, and I'm ecstatic because when you go to Egypt, when you go to the Valley of the Kings, you're given about 45 minutes to do intensive research, on these tombs. Well, come to Nashville, see the tombs with me this summer. We'll spend all day walking through there, and we'll look at it, and we'll absolutely study it in detail. It's going to be I'm just ecstatic at this opportunity to get a firsthand look at the stuff that belonged to the founder of the Rosicrucians and the Illuminati.
Okay, no follow-up?
No.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Idrissa Walker calling from Orlando, Florida.
Hi, Idrissa. Go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering, is this the same William Henry that wrote Lost, that has the documentary Lost Science of the Soul, Breaking the Reptilian Code?
Yes.
Wow, you're deep.
It's him.
You are extremely deep.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, a lot of people should check that out and memorize some of the imagery that you brought up there, because I've even noticed some of it in tarot cards, and it just pops up everywhere. Even if when you watch, like, History Channel, you see massive amounts of that imagery, especially with the serpents. Every culture has the serpents.
You're right, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because it enables me to talk about a project I'm working on right now. I'm creating a site called Cosmic Kindergarten. And the purpose of it, I'm using a character I created named Junior Cosmic Egg. It's the story of a cosmic egg named Junior who grows up to become his own universe. And what I'm going to do is create a children's metaphysical workshop. You know, when we grow up, we're taught the alphabet, but we're never, ever, ever taught the meaning of the alphabet, where the letter A came from in its symbolic sense and its connection throughout the planet. We're never, ever taught the meaning of symbols, even though we spend our whole lives swimming in a sea of symbols. And this is how the quote-unquote controllers are able to manipulate us, because they count on the total blindness of the average individual to the language of symbolism. So I've come up with a potential solution here. I'm going to create Cosmic Kindergarten and teach the language of symbolism to people of all ages. And I'm thinking it's going to be something that will ultimately help us to unify our language, our symbol system, and ultimately to help individuals connect with the power of these symbols.
William, I love that idea.
Well, thank you. Yeah, me too. It's something I've been working on for a while, and I hoped to have had something up on the site for this interview. I'm sorry I didn't, but at least I can make an announcement for it. So I thank you for that question.
Are you a believer in the multiverse, that there's more than one universe?
I'm totally a believer in that. The multiverse and the field, this is totally where it's at. In fact, that in my lecture in Egypt, my second one, which is called Egyptian Stargate Metaphysics, The Dimension of the Blessed, I go into detail about the ancient Egyptian artwork that reflects this, not only the multiverse, but this field of quantum energy, this conscious creative energy that embodies, that each of us embody and interact with.
Next up, let's go to our first time caller line. Your turn. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Sage. I'm calling from Oakland, Sage. California.
Okay, Sage, go ahead.
I wanted to respond to your theories regarding the moon, and you seem pretty confident about all, you know, the things you've been talking about, except for that one. And I wanted to share my theory that I know you're probably familiar with Eastern philosophy and the Golden Age, and that we're in an age of machine now.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what I think is that the moon was the old Earth, while this Earth that we're on was in the process of being created.
That's
of course, before when it was a paradise, and that we're in the age of machine now, while a new Earth is being created.
Why do you believe this?
Well, I read a book called God Speaks. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
Yeah, sure have.
You have?
Yeah.
So that's actually where I got it from. I didn't make it happen.
You stole the theory.
but I really believe in that philosophy, and a lot of the Eastern philosophy of combination of Buddhist and Hindu theories of reincarnation and stuff. It feels so so real inside me that it's, you know, it's kind of like an explanation to where we go and why we're here. That's much more complex than heaven and hell, and, you know, you die and you just either go one way or the other, you know. And I thought, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
So, I'm glad to hear that you've heard of that book, God Speaks, because...
It's by Mahur Baba.
Yes.
Strange named author.
It's it means compassionate father. It actually was given to him. It's not his birth name.
Ah, interesting. William, what's your take on all this?
Well, I think it's very interesting. It reminds me of Zechariah Sitchin's take that after this possible or alleged celestial cataclysm involving Tiamat, that the genetic seeds that were planted on the Earth were imported from the moon. And so it suggests that idea. And then the other thought that I had as she was talking, that we're in this machine age and a new Earth is being created. I would submit that new world that's being created is a virtual world. It's a cyber world, that we're going to be creating it on what we presently call the Internet, which is a portal or gateway into a three-dimensional hologram that we're in the process of creating. And that will ultimately be a place that's populated by avatars of ourselves that are aspects of ourselves that we probably can't even imagine existing at the moment, but which will be interacting with the avatars of other people in this invisible three-dimensional but yet three-dimensional realm.
Do you still believe that there's a portal or a Stargate in Iraq?
I certainly do. Yes, absolutely. I'm more and more convinced of that, and we still don't have an explanation for why we went to Iraq, did we? I mean, it's still the biggest unanswered question. But yet, when we look at the apocalyptic vision that's attempting to be purveyed on this planet and sold by the mass media, where we have evangelical Christianity lining up against radical Islam, it all lines up, because this whole idea of invading and destroying Babylon is one of the trigger events before the Messiah can return. Likewise, with Iran, they're looking at an apocalyptic scenario that will enable the return of the Mahdi. These people are nuts, and I'm really sick of it. And I'm hoping that we can all get our hearts and minds together and stop this nuclear conflagration that's about to unfold on this planet because of some mentally ill people who think they have the truth.
east of the Rockies. You're on the air with William Henry on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm calling from McAllen, Texas.
Sure, Chris. Go ahead.
I was wondering, William, if you know from the text of this this Gospel of Judas, whether or not the deity of Christ is brought up, or if it is even treated. That's my question. Also, one comment that I'd like to make about this this Gospel of Judas. Not all evangelical Christians have any fear toward this information, and you know, talking from my own perspective, I don't fear new information that comes out. I have no animosity toward anyone who espouses it. I am secure enough in what has already been written, and I believe in that as something that was divinely inspired. And yet, I also search for additional truths. As you know, the apostles wrote, there is more than what was written in the Bible as truth. So at the same time, I can see that something new coming in is something that can be looked at from an objective viewpoint, yet not all of us are going to believe the same thing about it.
I love it, Chris. That's beautifully said, brother. I mean, that's exactly the whole point, isn't it? That we're asking questions here, and we're not saying we have the truth. We are still seeking the truth. And any shard of information that comes along, the shard of the original mirror that's going to enable us to have that insight or reflection that will transform us into the shining beings that we can become, we have to welcome. And by the way, I wanted to say hi to my friend Renita down there in McAllen, Texas. I was there back in January and had a lovely time, and hope to be able to come back down there. And maybe, Chris, you'll be able to pop into an event we have down there.
Nashville is a wonderful town, isn't it?
It's absolutely. It's, in my view, the new city of light. It is a replica of ancient Athens. We have a duplicate of the Parthenon from ancient Greece. We have the Temple of Mars here that was present in ancient Athens. And we have this amazing 2,200-foot-long magician's rod, this initiation temple that's laid out at the base of our state capitol. And I would love it if everybody would get in touch and pass through Nashville as soon as possible in order to help awaken what I am calling a temple of light.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with William Henry. Hi there. Hello. Go ahead. Well, we'll have to just disconnect. And
can I make a quick comment, George?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on this Nashville question, one of my primary sources for upholding Nashville as this new city of light is Dr. J.J. Hertog in his book, The Keys of Enoch. He clearly states that Nashville, or actually a corridor running from Lexington, Kentucky to Nashville, Tennessee, is to be an enlightenment center. And I'm highly, highly intrigued that Hertog also suggested that a second enlightenment center would also be, quote-unquote, activated during the same time in the southwestern portion of the United States. And if you don't mind, I'd like to make this as a side note, this comment that this helps to explain what is animating this whole Mexican immigration wave right now. According to some, they're seeking to recreate what's called the Nation of Aztlan. And this Aztlan movement calls for the establishment of an independent nation composed of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, and other portions of the Southwest.
And California, right?
And California. This is the fulfillment of prophecy of a new Aztlan, Atlantis, or Tula that would be created in the Southwest and also in the southeastern quadrant of the United States. So in my view, there's a much bigger issue unfolding here than protecting our borders. There is a movement to fulfill prophecy to create this new nation of Aztlan in the southwestern portion of the United States that is complemented, according to Hertog.
Stay with us, William. Back with more. About a month ago, I got a small advance check on the book, Worker in the Light. And as I promised, part of those proceeds are going right back to Coast listeners. So some of those checks have gone out. And I know from some people who have emailed me back how delighted they are and, quite frankly, in shock that they were able to get that, but it has helped some people get through some really tough times. And that's what we're going to do. The book, Worker in the Light, comes out September 19th. It is now available on Amazon.com for pre-orders, and it is being discounted by Amazon.com. I don't know if I should tell you that, but it is, just to let you know that. And, you know, we'll just continue to use some of those proceeds that come in, and I'll just send out the checks on my own. This is not sanctioned through the network or anybody else. This is something I want to do for those Coast to Coast listeners who have been so supportive of the show and of me and of Art and Ian over all these years. And just our little way of saying thank you. I want to give back a little bit from what you have given us so much. But the book is called Worker in the Light by me and William Burns, B-I-R-N-E-S. You can find it on Amazon.com. They are taking the pre-orders now, even though you won't get the book until September 19th. And we are working on a book tour now. So there are some major cities that I will be going to in the not-too-distant future, beginning sometime in May. I've got to go to Washington, D.C. for a major book expo, which really will kick this thing off. And it's been a great, fun experience. And we're almost finished up. This one took a long time. And we're almost finished up with book number two. And I'm going to do the same thing. So also, thank you to our producer, our line producer at night, Tom Danheiser, who worked with me on his own time to accumulate so many of those emails that I received from some of our needy listeners. So thanks to all of you. And a few more months, it'll come out, and we'll see what all the book reviewers have to say. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls with another noted author, historian, and investigative mythologist, William Henry, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let's go right back to the calls with our special guest, William Henry. Wildcard line, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, George.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
First of all, I wanted to tell you that William is right. I have a book here, not right at my hand, but it showed the steps in Iraq that was to an old temple, and it led to a portal, they said, like long time ago. I'm going to find that book. But it just reminded me when he had mentioned it.
Okay.
Okay. And I wanted to ask William about John DePoe. He has the Coral Castle coat. He said he's got it broken.
How could he? This is incredible. I've never heard of this one.
Well, that's what I'm asking William. If he's on like his website, and he's got pictures and clues of the way he said it's in ancient pictures of Christ. It's in the Last Supper picture, and I just want to know if he's been to his website and seen it. He doesn't know exactly how to put it together, I guess, but he said this is what Ed has left for, you know, the world to see. I mean, I looked at his website, and it's fascinating.
All right. You holding back on us, William, and do you have the secrets to the Coral Castle?
No, I've glanced at the gentleman's site, and I'm highly intrigued by it, especially the way that, I mean, he has a very acute sense of pattern recognition and being able to perceive that the visual code or clues that Ed Lee Scallon left are, in fact, duplicated in the Church of Mary Magdalene at Rennes-le-Château and are, in fact, found in other pieces of art around the world. I do believe that there is this ancient sacred science that has been transmitted through symbols and in this visual code. Ed Lee Scallon did find it, and he does appear to have left those clues for us. I'm hoping to get down into that area soon and look at it firsthand, and maybe then I'll be in a better position to actually comment on that, because as I mentioned earlier, one of my life's quests now is to help to uncover this lost secret of anti-gravity and ironclad proof of this advanced sacred science and the means that we can utilize it today for peaceful purposes.
You should team up with William, Richard Hoagland, William, because he is fast on the trail as well. You two might find yourselves winning a Nobel Prize in Science, come up with that one.
We'll dedicate it to Coast to Coast AM. And by the way, George, congratulations on your book project. That is a beautiful concept. And please, by all means, let me know if there's anything I can do to assist
you in the
promotion. Maybe we'll even turn the tables and I'll get to interview you on Dreamland or something.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I tell you, it took about a year longer than I thought it would to get out. And you know what it's like. But
always takes longer.
It's not easy. You know, I got into it first with an outline, and I found a literary agent in New York, and then they went to work with the publisher, and then Bill Burns came aboard with me, and I really thought it was going to be okay. Hey, this is fun, and man, it's a lot of work, especially when you're doing a full-time radio show and all these other projects.
Right. I mean, it totally taxes your imagination, your spiritual energy, but it's so worth it. And the cliches are all true. The journey is the reward. And now it's going to be, I think, an incredible ticket for you that's going to take you to places you probably have never even imagined possible before. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Let's go on to other callers with our guest, William Hendry. Let's go to you, west of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, this is John from Monterey, California.
Sure, John. Go ahead, sir.
I'd like to ask your guest. He seems to have a lot of knowledge of Egypt.
And, he sure does.
I think it's interesting how back in the day, it seems you had two schools of thought, the Gnostics in Alexandria and the Christians in Rome, and obviously Rome won out. And it's kind of interesting to think about how the world might be different if the opposite were the case. But the underground stream of the mystery schools has continued to the present day with groups such as the Rosicrucians and the Masons, and it's interesting to note how they use principally Egyptian symbolism in their rituals and their teachings. But what I want to ask about is if your guest is familiar with Aleister Crowley's The Book of the Law and how it came to be. The story is that he channeled it while he was in Egypt from someone who said they were an emissary of a particular Egyptian god.
I've heard about it, have not read it. William, what about you?
Right. I'm not as familiar with it as perhaps I should be to comment on it, other than to say that here is another prime example of this oral tradition that is gifted to individuals, channeled or downloaded in Egypt. There is something about the resonance of those temples that enables them to preserve and transmit not just energy, but also information. Yeah, I believe the reason they can do that is because this knowledge is already latent within our DNA, and all it awaits, like a flower needing sunshine, is that extra bit of energy in order for this knowledge to blossom from within.
That's interesting you say that, because as the story goes, Crowley one night somehow gained access to the king's chamber of the Great Pyramid, and to show off to his new wife, performed this ritual to invoke Horus. And as the story goes, over the next few days, his wife, who previously had no knowledge of anything esoteric, started to kind of jabber about messages being sent to her from this hawk-headed god. And that kind of led to Crowley investigating what she was talking about and using her as a seer, and eventually being a channel to supposedly write this book. And it all came about because he was in the king's chamber of the Great Pyramid and supposedly channeled this energy, like you said, that may be just latent and waiting for somebody at the right time to come through.
That's a fascinating story.
It really is, and I can understand a little bit of it. Behind every great man is a great woman, and while in Egypt I was in the company of part of our group with an extraordinary woman that carried that kind of energy, and walking through the temples with her was heart chakra awakening. I have never experienced this kind of feeling before in my life. It was astounding. And I
do believe that it is the magic, the mystery between a man and a woman that truly enables these mysteries to come forward, that it has to be the unity of the male and female as the circumstances where revelation can actually occur.
Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Roger from Westport, Washington.
Hello, Roger.
I spent 22 and a half years on the ocean fishing, and during that time, I had a lot of time to read, and I got into reading the Edgar Cayce files.
Sure.
Different readings. And in there, I mean, I have no exact numbers to give you or anything, but I remember specifically reading about Edgar Cayce said stone with the right resonance will float through air like metal floats through water, is how he said the pyramids were built. He also gave some readings on people that had witnessed flying saucers that were very upset. And he, in one I can remember, because this stuff's always interested me, he said that, told the guy not to worry because the flying saucer was from a planet from another universe smaller than ours, but these weren't ones you needed to worry about. You know, that it's something that's been happening for a long time and everything. But, I mean, I've tried to buy every book anybody ever wrote on him, and I still do. But I think you guys should look into that for some of the answers. I mean, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I really think it's something you should look into.
Well, William, I've been a fan of Edgar Cayce really for years. And, you know, he brings a different perspective to a lot of things that he did.
Oh, I agree. I, again, am not a student, per se, of Edgar Cayce. Certainly respect the legacy.
Sure.
And am highly intrigued by so much of what he had to say, and one day hope to make it over there to the ARE and do some investigating personally.
Let's go to East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with William Henry. Hi there.
Hi, this is Karen in Houston.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. Right off, I want to say thank you for what you do, both of you.
Sure.
To give credit where credit is due, I have a tie-in from some of my just, you know, reading around between Da Vinci and, of course, Edgar Cayce and the Masonic. It all kind of ties in for me, the story of the Christ and Jesus, the man who became the Christ, and John the Baptist, who was the forerunner of him. And the way I understand it, the Great Pyramid was a place of initiation, and that's understood in the Masonic. And it seems that when John went there, Jesus was put through certain degrees, and the last of the degrees was for him to go and be baptized in the water, and that's when the Christ Spirit settled on him, which is a very ancient spirit in itself. It's so ancient, and it's been around, and every once in a while it will light on the right person. And at the crucifixion, where Jesus is dying on the cross and he cries out, "Eli, Eli, why have you forsaken me?" It's because that spirit had to leave him so that he could die. And then, of course, it returned later and he was resurrected. But like Cayce said, Jesus the one time, but the Christ forever. And there have been many Christ. And that goes back to, you know, Abraham and Joshua and all the others, Jacob, and different ones.
Well, how do you feel, Karen, about this Gospel of Judas, if indeed the capture, the arrest of Jesus was, created in order for all these events to occur?
Well,
does it bother you?
No, when I first heard that about Judas, I knew the Christ was in control, Jesus was, and he picked his people specifically for what they were going to do at the time of his ministering and after. And I knew someone had to do the dirty work. And in my heart of hearts, anyone who would be near him would understand him and would have to obey, even if it ripped his soul out, that he would have to be the one for the prophecies and all the Jewish messianic scriptures to come true. Someone had to do the job, and it had to be done in a certain order. And there was 30 pieces of silver that had to fall prophetically, had to fall into someone's hands.
Do you back that up, William?
Well, as she was talking about the Great Pyramid connection, let me just mention something that I think about when I'm at the Giza Plateau. if you look at a top-down view of the Giza Plateau as provided by a satellite image, for instance,
you
don't see three pyramids. You see three crosses, exactly the configuration
that we see at the crucifixion.
Yeah. We see an empty tomb. We see the Great Pyramid as an empty tomb. And strangely, the Egyptian term for the Giza Plateau was Rosto. The Greek word for the pillar of crucifixion, not cross, but pillar was the original word. The Greek word is Stavro. Rosto and Stavro are mirror images of one another. And it makes me wonder if the actual site of crucifixion was, in fact, the Giza Plateau and the empty tomb that Mary Magdalene went to on Easter morning was, in fact, the Great Pyramid.
Good point. Let's go to our final caller, first-time caller. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Well, I know I'm going to probably get laughed at for this one, but...
we're already laughing. I haven't even heard you yet.
I've always been curious and kind of what I've always thought was a lighthearted conspiracy theory behind the TV shows Stargate, that the TV shows are on TV to desensitize the public to the existence of such technology. And I was just curious what your guests might think of that.
I think we see example after example of that, don't we? Look at Star Trek and how the creations in Star Trek, the flip phone, the communicator, have been translated into our common technology vis-a-vis the cell phone. There's almost, just so many examples of that. And I think that we're going to start to see the same thing in the movie Stargate. But what is required here, I believe, is not just an apprehension of the possibility of this technology, but what we have to begin to get a hold of is the metaphysics behind this technology, the spiritual component of it. And this, I don't watch Stargate. I watched the movie. I watched the movie Contact. Those are my favorite.
I love that movie.
Yeah. But I don't watch Stargate SG-1. I don't watch Stargate Atlantis. I don't want to be corrupted, in a sense, because I have a vision. I follow my own vision. If it matches what is in the collective imagination, that's outstanding. But I do feel that the gentleman caller has a very valid point, that be it a secretive organization that filters us through, or if it's just the collective imagination of humankind, which is the greatest nation all of us can be a part of, says my friend Brian Gore, the imagination, it's being reflected all around us. It's instructing us. It's pointing to the potential that we all have. And when someone's doing that, I'm all for it.
Well, I got to tell you, you have been once again doing yeoman's work for all of us, William. Thank you so much. Your website, williamhenry.net. And are you going to be in the National Geographic show once they put it together?
Yes. They shot 5-6 hours of video of me, so I presume they're going to whittle it down to about 2 minutes. And I'll keep you posted as I get word.
Yeah, let me know. We'll let everybody know when you're going to be on. That'll be fun to watch.
And by the way, I'll be in L.A. in July, too, for the L.A. MUFON meeting and the Orange County meeting. So hopefully we'll be able to get together with you.
Part of July, I should be in L.A., so make sure you track me down.
Okay. Blessings to you, George.
Okay. William Henry. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Nikki Imbrononi, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition, where it'll be our Friday into Saturday night open lines, and I shall be giving you 4 hours of open lines this time. Until then, be safe, everyone.